21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
It's all about soul. It's all about faith and a deeper devotion. It's all about soul. 'Cause under love is a stronger emotion.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. I'm Zoe Hieronymus. Laura Kortner is our executive producer and Noah Dankner runs our board. Joining us this hour are two men, both whom have stayed focused on the impact and destruction wrought by the nuclear industry to human health, to the ecosystem, to life itself. Harvey Wasserman joins us for an update of his current work focusing on the Fukushima reactors and the ongoing fallout worldwide since March 11, 2011. We'll also look at the international cover-up of what can only be called a nuclear nightmare. Harvey's ongoing writings and actions can be found at www.harveywasserman.com. Also joining us is Joe Mangano, who is Executive Director of the Radiation and Public Health Project, which can be found online at www.radiation.org. Joe will share some of his years of research on the proven impacts of nuclear radiation to human health, and the reaction of low radiation sources on all of our immune systems. Thank you for joining us, both of you, Harvey and Joe.
Thank you for having us. It's an honor.
So, Harvey, the last time we were together was a couple months back, and you were with others collecting signatures to take to the UN with hope of changing the response to Fukushima to a worldwide response rather than a takeover by, as some have said, the Japanese mafia.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the Japanese mafia are still in control of the Fukushima nuclear plant. It's quite amazing, actually. Here we've had a global-scale catastrophe, and the plant, the three reactors that melted and the four that exploded, you know, it's amazing just to be saying that, are still in the hands of a private corporation. And Tokyo Electric Power Company, which owns Fukushima, had a hugely profitable year last year. They paid, you know, they're insulated from the damages to the public and to the human health and to the property that they've irradiated. And they are getting money from the government to proceed with an alleged cleanup that they're completely incapable of managing. They don't have the financial, they don't have the technological, they don't have the scientific, and they don't have the logistical capabilities of dealing with this, if anybody does. And they're still in business. They're still making money. They have a workforce at the site that's controlled by the Yakuza, or the Japanese mafia. They're dumping 300 tons of radioactive water into the Pacific every day. And, you know, what we now have in Japan is always a fascist government. And I use that term advisedly because it's being used by many, many people in Japan to describe this administration. It's very pro-militaristic and, of course, pro-nuclear. They want to reopen the reactors. There are 48 reactors in Japan that are shut. They want to reopen them, even though many of them are still on earthquake faults, including one at Kashiwazaki. There are seven reactors at Kashiwazaki that were actually hit by a very strong earthquake a few years ago. So all this is going on. The radiation that's detectable in the ocean is about to come to California. It's been detected going around the Pacific Rim in Alaska and in Canada, and will be hitting the northern United States and California this summer. And we've had fish that have turned up radioactive. You know, it's an apocalyptic situation. And I'm honored to be on with Joe Mangano because he's done a lot of the basic research on the immediate health impacts on human beings. And it's his contention, I won't put words in his mouth, but it's his contention that there's clear evidence that people in the United States have already been harmed. And a lot of my work has hinged on Joe's work for many, many years. And you may want to ask him the question, has Fukushima harmed the health of Americans?
Yeah, Joe, go right ahead. You know, I had a chance to go to your site this evening just before you were able to join us. And I think what's so amazing is how much data you all have collected for this entire nuclear age. Share with our audience, as you do readers to your website at radiation.org, what you already know from prior disasters, whether it was a Chernobyl or Three Mile Island, about the health of people. And then we can parlay that to what you've already found, as Harvey mentioned, of people in the United States.
Well, if I can, I'll certainly answer the question in depth. But I first want to give just a bit of background about who we are, because it really sets the stage for the answer of how we go about looking at health hazards.
Sure.
From reactors. The Radiation Public Health Project was founded in 1989 by a statistician and a radiation physicist, Jay Gould and Ernest Sternglass. And the reason we even exist and do what we do was because basically in this country, and really in most of the world, there are no studies done of harm to human health from nuclear reactors, either from routine releases or from meltdowns. Hard to believe, because reactors have been running since World War II, you know, 70 years ago. But I hate to jump into political issues. I like to talk in just terms of health research, but we're in a political fishbowl here, so I have to say it. It all comes from the reason that the atom is part of our world. It first came around in World War II because of, to build a weapon of mass destruction that was later used on Japan. And then right after that, to test and build thousands of atomic bombs to fight what a lot of people believe was going to be an inevitable nuclear war between the Soviet Union and the U.S. Because of this, the health issue took, at best, a backseat to national security and military goals, all right? And from the get-go, there was a lot of denial that any exposure to radiation harmed people. From atomic bomb fallout and certainly from nuclear reactors. And that's the way this country has operated, and all countries have operated for quite a long time. That there are standards in place, and if you fall within the standards, you can keep your license, you can keep running your reactor, and there are no health problems. Which is just absolutely flies in the face of good, objective, scientific research. And that's why we came into play.
And
to start doing studies.
And which you have. And so when you go and you look at the amount of data that you've shown, you know, the links between low-level radiation and worldwide increases in diseases like cancer and those affecting newborns and children. So talk to us a little bit about the spike you saw after Chernobyl and something you're now seeing again as after Fukushima.
I'll tell you about Three Mile Island and then Chernobyl,
okay,
because they both affect what our work is with Fukushima. Three Mile Island, the partial meltdown in Pennsylvania 35 years ago, just the other day. In the first 11 years after the meltdown, there were absolutely no articles in the scientific literature addressing very basic questions about what was the change in cancer rates locally, what was the change in infant death rates locally, or in birth defect rates locally. None. 31 articles appeared addressing psychological issues in publications like the Journal of Psychosomatic Medicine and American Journal of Psychology, looking at how the meltdown affected people mentally. This is obviously a McCarthyist type of approach, where if anybody dared come out and address these issues professionally, they were going to be in trouble.
Okay. Right. This is also what they've done in the UFO field. It's always the same thing.
Right.
You know, kill the messenger by calling him a psychiatric case.
That's right. And finally, as it turned out, Columbia University did a study. Then University of North Carolina did a study. One said that the meltdown caused cancer. One said it didn't. They had a fight in the journals, literally. Angry names were exchanged, and it was quite terrible. Then we get to and still to this day, we don't know, we don't have much of an idea of the full impact of Three Mile. Now we have Chernobyl, which occurred in 1986 in the former Soviet Union, which is a lot more similar to Fukushima than Three Mile Island was. I mean, it is an ongoing discussion. What was worse, Fukushima or Chernobyl? I mean, to me, whether you're number one or number two, it doesn't matter. They are both the worst nuclear disasters ever. And who knows, maybe arguably the worst environmental disasters in world history. What happened after Chernobyl? Immediately, there was a rush to judgment by officials who came out and claimed that the only casualties were 31 cleanup workers who were busy putting out the fire and took on huge doses of radiation and died quickly. That they stuck to that number 31 for a long, long time. A few articles came out on childhood thyroid cancer, you know, starting like 6 years after the meltdown, but then the establishment's line was, well, we had 31 workers and some kids with thyroid cancer, you know, being, you know, who were harmed by it. No one else. Finally, obviously, nothing could be further from the truth. And the closest to the truth we've gotten is a wonderful book written in 2009. It's called Chernobyl. It's got a long name. The lead author is a fellow named Alexei Yablokov. It looked at 5,000 articles and reports, many in the Slavic language, many that were never made public before this. And they concluded that in the first 19 years after Chernobyl, almost a million deaths, 985,000 deaths occurred worldwide, and the number is rising as time goes on. That's the kind of thing we're dealing with, even though still to this day some of the major bodies like the World Health Organization and the International Atomic Energy Association is sticking with a low number. I think they've allowed that 9,000 cancer deaths occurred. Again, way, way, way lower than the reality. And this is what is how Fukushima started up. Almost mm-hmm. from the minute that the meltdown began in March 2011, there was that immediate rush to, well, the doses were low. The Japanese controlled the meltdown very efficiently, keeping exposures to workers and to people low, and the evacuation. That is all just a terrible campaign of propaganda. The huge amounts of radiation.
And ongoing.
Four reactors.
Yeah, exactly. And I the scale, I remember reading Carl Grossman's piece on this recently, and just the scale of Chernobyl, one-time hit, and now this is ongoing and constant. And I think it was Dr. Helen Caldicott who said she expects at least a million cancers over the next 30 or so years in the Japanese community alone. And we're talking about radiation that is now traveling the globe through the currents in the ocean.
See, that it's very, very hard to get an exact estimate, but it's to say a million or in the millions is not at all out of line, because you're dealing with a very densely populated country, Japan. It's got 130 million people in a place the size of California. You've got a huge amount of radiation. All the radiation is getting into the food chain, into the water, into the milk, into the vegetation. And the meat and fish. And then, of course, it went around the globe. It circles the plume in the air of this hot radiation, went clear around the northern hemisphere. It got to the U.S. West Coast 5 days after the meltdown first started, and it got into our food chain as well. So, and we have this documented by you know, Environmental Protection Agency and other documents. This is a very, very, very serious thing.
And the thing is, Harvey and I have talked about before, we have to take a little break and we come back. I'd like to talk to you both about it because, one, there's a cover-up by the governments. Then there's a cover-up by the medical and environmental, so to speak, safe guardians of our environment, which don't seem to be much guardians. And then we have this extraordinary silence by the general media, at least in this country. And to me, I'd like to hear both of your opinions. I mean, there's obviously the status quo investment of corporation and the, you know, whatever, but still it's illogical. So I'd like to hear a rational explanation for an illogical phenomena. Our guests are Harvey Wasserman. You can find him at solartopia.org, and Joe Mangiano, who is the executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project. And you can find them online at www.radiation.org. And folks, when you go there and you start reading the articles, you will be sick about the kind of negligence that we are surrounded by worldwide.
Hi, this is Ann Rabe, and I'm with the Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, CHEJ. We're a national environmental health group, and you can reach us at www.chej.org. You're listening to 21st Century Radio and the very interesting talk show of Dr. Zohara Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Remember, all of our guests and all of our programs are archived online for free, and links to everybody's websites at 21st21stcenturyradio.com. If you've just joined us, Harvey Wasserman of solartopia.org and Joe Mangano, who is the executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project, can be found at radiation.org. And we are discussing really the most undiscussed, underreported travesty, tragedy, extraordinary disaster in our lives at Fukushima, Japan. So, Harvey, I want to come back to you and then to you, Joe, again. I'm going to drop the media question for a moment and save that for later because, Harvey, the last time we were together, the focus you had mentioned was these signatures to go to the UN to try to get some sort of international response. Did anything come from that at the UN?
150,000 signatures to the Secretary General of the United Nations and to the Japanese government, and we have never heard a word from either one of them. So there you go. And, you know, these people have their corporate investments. There are 400-plus commercial reactors operating around the world. There are 100 in the United States. We did succeed in shutting 4 last year. We know another one's going to shut this year, Vermont Yankee. So the movement against these things is very powerful and ongoing. You know, people ask me all the time, so what can I do? And I say, shut your local nuclear plant. That's the only thing that we really know is going to help matters. And I want to point out one thing. Joe, and you should ask about this, but Joe Mangano has done a study that shows very likely human health impacts from Fukushima in the United States. But what we have to understand is that, in a certain sense, the human health impacts and the immediate human health impacts are the least of our worries, because the radiation from Fukushima and from Chernobyl and from Three Mile Island and all these other plants, is other reactors, is undercutting our entire global ecosystem. And I have to say, I came across one of the most frightening articles I've ever read 2 weeks ago. I'm about to put a piece up about it at TruthDig and about at solartopia.org. And it was in the Smithsonian. It was based on a scientific study that showed that the flora, the trees, the leaves, the fallen vegetation that has died in and around Chernobyl is not biodegrading. In other words, there are tree trunks there that have felt, many, many years ago, that normally would have turned into sawdust and been, you know, returned back to the humus of the soil. They're just lying there, petrified. And what that tells us is that the radiation from Chernobyl is undercutting all the microorganisms that are at the bottom of our ecosystem. And when you think about that, it's absolutely terrifying. You know, people are yelling about, is the fish safe to eat from the Pacific Ocean? The real question is, are the fish going to live at all? What's going to happen to the algae and to the amoeba and to the plankton and to all the other microelements that make up our ecosystem in the oceans and on the land? And so Joe and his project do fabulous work. And as he mentioned, they're the only ones out there doing it. You know, there's no ongoing health studies from Fukushima. They dismantled the health studies that were ongoing in Pennsylvania around Three Mile Island. You know, the backers of nuclear power love to jump up and down and say you have no evidence that nobody's been killed. The one good thing, the one thing that the nuclear power industry is good at is not studying the health impacts of their technology. And so, you know, Joe has given the radiation, his radiation project, health project, has given us great data on the health impacts on human beings.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm really concerned about is the whole ecosystem.
Well, no question. No question. And I, you know, with, I saw, Joe, that with internist toxicologist Jeanette Sherman, that you all are doing this, you did this piece in the International Journal of Health Service. Talk to our audience a little bit about what that shows.
Yes, we had an immediate goal. As soon as Fukushima occurred, we did not want to repeat a Three Mile Island in Chernobyl, where you had to wait years and years and a study or two dribbled out. We wanted to document potential impact right away to keep, essentially to keep people educated and to keep the media reporting this. Within a year of the meltdown, we published that study that you mentioned in the International Journal of Health Services. Now, the only data we had at that point was estimates of total deaths and infant deaths in the United States based on a 23% sample, which isn't a bad one. We found that in the 4 months right after the meltdown occurred and the fallout from Fukushima came to the U.S., there was an additional 14,000 deaths in the U.S. Beyond what would be expected. Now, later on, we updated our data to and changed the number to 22,000. I think it's important to note, too, that our co-founders, who I mentioned, Drs. Gould and Sternglass, did the same study after Chernobyl. So I can't take credit for a new, neat idea. It was theirs. And they found in the first 4 months after Chernobyl about a 15,000 death excess. That we published. It got a lot, provoked a lot of reaction from both supporters and opponents, but until, you know, to this day, there is no explanation why death rates jumped.
And also, as your report says, especially among infants.
Yes, it was high. It was high. The percentage increase was highest among infants, which would go along with the radiation theory because it is the fetus and the infant who are far more susceptible to radiation than adults.
Well, and then the recent study you did in the Open Journal of Pediatrics showed, quote, rising numbers of infants born with an underactive thyroid gland.
Yep,
the West Coast.
That was to last year. Now, see, we're waiting for data to come in, basically, and whatever we get, we jump on and run with. Last year's, actually, two articles in the Open Journal of Pediatrics looked at the change in babies born with hypothyroidism, which is an underactive thyroid, a condition that's very radiation sensitive, especially to one of the many chemicals in the radioactive mix from reactors, specifically iodine. And we found that on the West Coast and the two states, Alaska and Hawaii, there was about a 17 or 18% increase in the 9 months after Fukushima, which basically covers those babies who were in the womb when the radiation hit. And again, fetuses being by far the most susceptible. The rest of the country, there was a smaller increase. But, of course, the West Coast was hardest hit. We know that for sure.
Let me elaborate on that a bit, because the apologists for nuclear power continually say that not enough radiation escaped from Three Mile Island or Chernobyl or Fukushima to damage human health.
That is so absurd.
But we know from 1956, when Dr. Alice Stewart, a British doctor, showed with a study that she wasn't looking for radiation, but she showed that pregnant women who are X-rayed give birth to children with a doubled chance of getting leukemia. And from that, we've extrapolated very clearly that there's no safe dose of radiation, because no matter how small the dose of radiation may be, the embryo of a human being is infinitely sensitive. And so what Joe was talking about in terms of the thyroid is iodine-131, which comes out of nuclear reactors in accidents and actually during so-called normal operations. And this will cross the placenta, and it will cause damage to the developing embryo and fetus. And there is no number that anybody can set on a dose that can be proven to be safe.
Of course not. And I remember when I interviewed Helen Caldicott so many years ago, and we were just talking about nuclear medicine, what a horror to think that first we radiated the land, and now we're radiating bodies, and somehow or other thinking that that's okay. I mean, I actually had an issue with my thyroid, and they wanted me to do a nuclear medical test, and I read it, and it said that every one in 1,000 persons has a chance of developing cancer from the test. And I said, I'm not doing that.
Well, we're having the same issue with mammograms, as you know.
Yeah. Also, which I don't do. I mean, all of this is taken so lightly, but the truth is that there's a war on our bodies as much as there's a war on Earth, and it all comes out of the same nuclear industry. Talk to me about the media. I just, you know, as a member of it, I'm so crazy right now with how stupid the media has become. I could just yell every day. But instead, I try to do a sensible program, you know, 2 hours a week. What has happened to the media?
Well, the corporations that control the media don't want any of this out. And you have to remember that we have gargantuan corporate investments in what I call King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas. And so they want none of this bad news to be out there in the public eye. They want this concealed. And, you know, it takes a completely underfunded organization like Joe's to go out and do any studies at all. And, you know, so, you know, they spent, 24-7 on this disappeared Malaysian airplane, and literally zero, on a disaster in Japan that continues to dump 300 tons of radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean every day. It's astounding. And it's all about money.
You know, but the disassociation is the thing that's so extraordinary and always has been to me, that humans can so disassociate themselves from that which is going to kill their own children and grandchildren for generations to come. But there's only the now of the profit, and that's really the corporate plantation, as people have always claimed. So, Joe, I want to come back to some of the medical findings that you have shown, because I saw that you have recorded all different changes in women, as well as people that live around Three Mile Island with a number period of years, as well as the things that concern you.
Are you talking about Fukushima, or are we opening this up a little more?
You can open it up to the bigger question, because we have lots of nuclear sites. And I remember Carl Grossman and I back in 2001 doing repeated shows on nuclear plants as military sites, meaning, you know, for enemies to attack, how easy it would be.
Yes. I'll start by immodestly saying that we have published 32 medical and scientific journal articles, which are peer-reviewed. It's not just the report I write and just put on our website. It's something that has to go, be submitted to a journal, be heavily referenced. It goes to reviewers who I don't know and who are experts in the field, and they decide whether or not it is or is not worthy of publication. And we have 32 of them, and they're listed on our website. We're quite proud of those.
And should be.
Thank you, because this is really the gold standard in health research. Here's what we found very quickly. Number one, near most nuclear, most of the time near nuclear plants, those radiation-sensitive cancers, such as thyroid cancer, such as childhood cancer, exceed state and national averages, often significantly. That's number one. Number two, we are the only ones to have ever done a study looking at in-body radiation levels of Americans living near nuclear plants. It was something called the Tooth Fairy Project, in which we collected and tested nearly 5,000 baby teeth, and we measured the levels of one of the 100-plus chemicals created by reactors called strontium-90. Again, this is not a new idea. We took it from the 1950s when atomic bombs were being tested in the air. At that time, a combination of scientists and citizens in St. Louis, led by Dr. Barry Commoner, did a baby tooth study. And they found that as testing went on, the levels went higher and higher. It went up 50 times as much from the beginning of testing until President Kennedy signed the test ban treaty. And by the way, this result of the study went to the White House. Science advisor was given to Kennedy at the time where he began to say, we need a treaty right away, which he signed a month before he was killed. We found out in our tooth study that the levels of strontium-90 are higher near nuclear plants, all the ones we studied, and that over time they are increasing. In the 1990s, they went up 50%. And then finally, this is a little bit of fresh air and good news. We've done several studies, and we've got another coming in the pipeline that looked at the question, never before addressed, what happens to local health when you close a nuclear reactor?
Yeah, by the way, this was one of the most beautiful things I read on your website.
Oh, thank you.
It's just lovely. It's beautifully done.
You know, that and the tooth study has gotten the greatest public response, because I think it is something that shows that we are not all doomed, that we can take steps to improve local health. And sure enough, we found that in every single nuclear plant that was shut down, in the first 2 years, there were sharp declines in infant deaths and cancers in very young children, 4 and under. And just last year, we followed with another study looking at long-term changes near the Rancho Seco plant in Sacramento, California, which closed 1989. In the 2 decades afterwards, there was a much sharper decline. We estimated about 4,300 fewer cancer cases in that one county over 20 years compared to if it had matched the state trends. There you have it. Close a reactor, health gets better, especially the health of the very young.
Mm-hmm.
And this is no different than populations that stop smoking cigarettes. You know, over time, you'll see lung cancer rates go down and rates of other disorders go down. This really is probably the most key thing that we are working on now as reactors get old and as the discussion of how long they should operate goes on.
Exactly. And we have to take our last break of the program. But when we come back, I want to come to you, Harvey, because your new report that begins, a stunning new report, writes Harvey Wasserman, indicates the U.S. Navy knew that sailors from the nuclear-powered USS Ronald Reagan took major radiation hits from Fukushima atomic power plant after its meltdown. And we'll talk about what's going on there. We'll be right back. Our guests are Harvey Wasserman. You can find him at solartopia.org and harveywasserman.com. And Joe Mangano, who's executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project. And you will be as happy as I was to find out about it from Harvey. And Harvey, thank you for the introduction to Joe Mangano.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Jorge Aguilar. I'm the Southern Region Director for Food and Water Watch. You can find us at www.foodandwaterwatch.org. And you are listening to Dr. Sohar Hieronymus on 21st Century Radio.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Harvey Wasserman rejoins us from solartopia.org and harveywasserman.com. Also, Joe Mangano, who's executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project, can be found at www.radiation.org. And folks, when you read the papers that they have created and that have been in the medical journals that you will never hear about, and then you wonder why I have screamed. Hey, by the way, gentlemen, Bob Alvarez and Kitty Tucker actually enlisted me decades ago. I was the key person in the Maryland legislature fighting food irradiation way back when, and I have to tell you, they were great teachers. I was glad.
Bob is a close colleague. He's a member of our board.
I saw that.
He could have been taught by a better teacher.
Oh, I saw that. Well, you know, it was so strange because I did it for about 5 or 6 years full time. And I found that it made me so sick physically to do the work around the nuclear issue itself. How do you two handle the reality of the nuclear consciousness of those that think there's nothing bad about selling death? And how do you preserve your own balance in this work?
I don't know. This is my 41st year doing it.
I know.
I have five children and five grandchildren now.
Oh, how blessed.
That's the ultimate incentive. And I got to tell you, you know, Joe mentioned that John Kennedy signed the Test Ban Treaty in 1963. One of the reasons he did it, it's because Jackie, his wife, lost a child.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked his science advisor, Jerome Wiesner, who was the president of MIT, if the rain could have been bringing down fallout from the tests that might have affected his unborn child. And Jerome Wiesner said absolutely. And I got to tell you, of all the treaties ever signed on this earth, it's likely that the Test Ban Treaty saved more lives than any other because it prevented huge quantities of radiation going into the atmosphere. So when you ask me why I do this, it's because we win. We do shut nuclear plants. It does happen.
Yeah, exactly. And a good question one of our listeners wrote in was about there's so many electronics that come from Japan or other things that are made there. If people are buying electronics, you think there's some sort of radioactive trace on any of it?
It's possible. It's definitely possible.
And then in terms of going forward, and I saw on your website, Joe, that there's actually, you give people the tools if you live in a state, as we do in Maryland, that has a power plant or one that they plan on reopening or shutting down, you give people the tools of what to do.
Well, yes. In a way, our government, our public health agencies are very, very good about producing data on health, you know, on death rates, on cancer incidence rates, and so on. There's a lot of it there. What they don't do is follow it up with studies. That's unfortunate. They leave it to people to use. And of course, most people. See, I'm trained in public health. I have a master's. I'm an epidemiologist. But you know, most people don't quite know how to go about it. But we've tried to encourage folks to use it because it's not that difficult, and we believe that data is power. We believe that the establishment who just declare nuclear power to be safe have no factual basis for saying so. There's not a scintilla of evidence supporting or showing that nuclear plants are safe. We actually took an objective approach. You know, are they safe or not? We don't know. But once we started getting into the all that great information that's there, we began to see a pattern set up, and it's not a good pattern.
No, and beyond the cancers, and what was that, Harvey?
Let me ask you one thing. You asked how we do this work year after year. Joe cited a study that showed that when nuclear plants shut down, people's lives are saved, and fewer people die, and the cancer rate drops, just like giving up cigarettes. And that's really what keeps us going, because,
right,
you know, if you can go to bed at night and wake up in the morning knowing that you have helped shut a nuclear plant, and in doing so you've saved human lives, there's no greater payback than that. And that's what we really work for.
That's my answer to your question, Zoe. You know, why do you do this? I mean, I'm trained in public health. Mm-hmm. I hate to sound so innocent, but this is what I was taught public health did. It prevented conditions.
Exactly.
Not just treated it, or not just figured out how to pay for a diagnosis and treatment, but to prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a society in which, for example, 41% of us are going to develop cancer, be diagnosed with cancer at some point in our lives. That is an absolutely outrageous figure for such an advanced society such as ours, and there needs to be an all-out war, not just to do more diagnosis and radiation treatments and chemotherapy treatments and surgical treatments, but to find causes and to install policies that address these causes,
yeah,
and reduce that incredibly high number.
But simple, you know, the repeating pattern of corporate investment and profit being the bottom line on a planet that's supposed to support life, we now see in the GMOs and in the genetically engineered markets. The same thing with the nuclear. I mean, so that we're watching the same pattern of the same obfuscation of the fact, even though the facts are available, the media doesn't lend a hand to really share with the public what it is. And, you know, and one of the things is, if this fallout from Fukushima is now traversing the Northern Hemisphere, it's going to show up in the milk and the food and the water and on tourists and airports and products and shipping bays around the world. So, as you all point out, fallout becomes local.
Yes.
Yeah, and it doesn't go away, and it impacts human health. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And as I said, the most terrifying thing now is to look at the microorganisms around Chernobyl. You look at the poisoning of the fish and all the ecosystems in the Pacific Ocean by what the industry loves to say that these are minuscule doses of radiation. But how much radiation does it take to impact the embryo of a starfish or of phytoplankton or of amoebas and algae? So, I mean, this is, what we're doing here is cutting out the core of our ecosystems. I do want to say, though, since we have a short period of time, there is an antidote. It is renewable energy, solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, ocean thermal. These work, biofuels. There's one ironic thing happening. The legalization of marijuana is actually helping with the legalization of hemp,
right,
which is a great crop for biofuels, which can make a huge difference in our world energy system. It's a fast-growing crop that needs no pesticides or herbicides. I mean, it's a weed after all. And so there is progress to be made. The price on photovoltaic cells, which convert sunlight to electricity, are plummeting. People are putting it up on their houses and cutting off the corporate tie. And this is why the nuclear industry is so terrified of renewable energy, because renewable energy can put them out of business.
Well, they will, and hopefully in our lifetime.
Well, sooner than that.
Sooner than that, as in tomorrow. And certainly the power of thought can do some of those things. In terms of Harvey, both you and Joe have mentioned what people can do. And Harvey, you said if you live in a state where there's a nuclear plant, it's to shut it down. What about nuclear medicine and trying to avoid x-rays and all those kinds of traditional treatments? They're not traditional, the Western treatment.
Yeah, it's a good idea to avoid x-ray. It took 30 years for the nuclear industry to concede that maybe we shouldn't be x-raying pregnant women. Dr. Alan Stewart found it out in 1956. It wasn't until the 80s,
mm-hmm,
when the medical profession said, well, maybe we shouldn't be x-raying pregnant women. And, of course, at Three Mile Island, when the accident happened, the industry proudly said that the radiation is just the equivalent of an x-ray. Well, what about all the pregnant women in the area,
right,
who were involuntarily x-rayed? So this is where it happens. But medical x-rays, yes, definitely avoid, if at all possible.
I agree with that. I mean, it's not that all x-rays are bad. Certainly they serve a purpose in our society, diagnosing and treating illness. However, if it's absolutely not necessary, it should not be done.
Exactly. And so we're almost out of time, but Harvey, I wanted to come back to you because I thought you wrote that beautiful article about the USS Ronald Reagan and the $1 billion lawsuit filed by the sailors against Tokyo Electric Power. What's going on with TEPCO and our Navy?
Well, the sailor was not allowed to sue the Navy, so they sued the TEPCO because TEPCO didn't inform anybody. There's controversy about what the Navy knew and didn't know. There's also controversy about how close to Fukushima was the USS Ronald Reagan with 5,500 sailors on it in the immediate aftermath of the accident. It's not exactly clear how close they were, but we do know that terrible symptoms have been surfacing among some. You know, these are 20-something sailors in great physical health who are suddenly coming down with terrible disease. It's reminiscent of the Lucky Dragon, which was a ship, a Japanese tuna vessel that was irradiated exactly 60 years ago in 1954 and by a bomb test. And the military said that it was not possible for any radiation impacts, but six of the 23 sailors on that boat died of liver cancer, including a radio operator who died within 6 months, who was 40 years old. So this is a serious situation with the Reagan. There were other ships in the area, and but they're limited. They can only sue TEPCO. We do know the Navy was misinformed or not informed, and we're going to have to follow this one very closely.
Well, even the Japanese, I saw, they weren't informed for 2 months that this had occurred?
Well, the Prime Minister. One thing that Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and Fukushima have in common is that the owners of those reactors lied to the government, including the governor of Pennsylvania, the Prime Minister of the Soviet Union, Gorbachev, and the Prime Minister of Japan, Mato Khan, all were lied to by the owners of the nuclear plants.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an extraordinary reality that we are all part of in the shared world, and I hope that our listeners, you know, will take to heart and use your beautiful websites, www.solartopia.org. That's Harvey Wasserman's, and you can also find him at harveywasserman.com. And Joe Mangano's The Radiation and Public Health Project. You all will really appreciate the quality of work so that you can use it in any state legislature, any kind of press party that you may have. And you can also find their work at www.radiation.org. Any final thoughts, Joe?
My final thought would be one of optimism. At one time, we thought we were going to have an inevitable nuclear war. And even though the Cuban Missile Crisis, we came very close, Kennedy and Khrushchev said, this is not going to work. They told their generals, we're not going to do this. The next year, they signed the Test Ban Treaty, which may have saved millions of lives. And now, finally, we are starting to close nuclear reactors. So the arc of history is slowly but definitely bending towards reduced exposures and better health.
Amen to all good things. And to our audience, thank you for joining us again. Find Harvey at solartopia.org and Joe's work at that of his community at www.radiation.org.
Thank you so much.
Talk around the clock
and breaking news now
on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio. I'm Bill Vitka. New heartbreak.